65,498 square miles. We've got a lot to cover, so let's get to it. This is Spanning the State, and here are your hosts, Kristen Bry and Brian Noonan.
Good afternoon. The rain is coming down. I don't know if it's going to still be raining for you on your drive home.
Yeah, it's supposed to be horrible throughout the night, which is very exciting. Always good. But you were out in it all day.
Well, yeah. So this morning I was over at Carroll University over in Waukesha.
Right.
They were having their sixth annual Ethos Symposium.
What is the Ethos Symposium?
So I guess it's their commitment to fostering meaningful and transformative learning experiences.
Okay.
So this year's theme was civility and democracy.
Oh.
And so they had reached out to me kind of the end of last year to come over and talk about how I approach that in my, especially in the online world
that I travel in.
Yes. So it was a really great event. Carroll University it's a beautiful campus, beautiful old campus.
Okay.
It's one of, I don't know if it's the oldest school in, it's very old school.
Okay.
But yeah, and so it was fun. It was fun to see students and faculty.
And this was men and women students? It was
men
everybody?
And women, yes. So men and women, faculty. It was interesting. You can tell some of the academics, they're trying to tussle with some of the bigger questions at hand as far as, because there's a lot of things you can't actually answer. It's like, how do we put the things back in Pandora's box when it comes to being online? And it's like, until our legislators decide to try to regulate it, I don't know how you regulate it without infringing on First Amendment rights. But yeah, it was good. It was really good.
What was the biggest piece of advice you imparted on these young, impressionable minds?
I don't know. I feel like the big thing is how I try to approach stuff, whether people listening right now think I do this or not, is
and if they don't, screw them. That's
true. Yeah, approaching conversations from a point of, instead of trying to change people, going into the conversation thinking that you're going to change someone's mind, go into it for seeking to understand, and and someone had followed up. One of the professors had followed up. It's like, well, what's the point of the conversations if you're not actually trying to change anyone's mind? And I was like, I think it's to give another point of view. Like, if you can make someone go, huh, I haven't thought of it that way, that's a step forward towards understanding and adding more nuance to the conversation, mm-hmm. instead of letting things be so black and white. But I don't know. I could be wrong on that.
Well,
I don't claim to be an expert.
Listen, you went in, they asked you to do something, you did it. I'm glad it went well.
Yeah, it was fun.
And the weather was horrible coming
back. The weather
back.
Was horrible, okay. But I do. I always, as much as I love talking to you, Brian, it is nice to be out and meet people.
Sure.
And do in real life, touch grass type events.
That's always good.
Yeah.
And the fact that they keep asking you is even better.
Yeah.
So that is good. But now you're here and we have a huge show to get to today.
Huge show. So coming up, this is actually kind of goes in line with the online conversation.
Uh-huh.
So, have you heard of the Manosphere?
I have.
You have?
I have. I heard about it when I read this article
not
prior to that.
So, I had never heard this term. I've heard the patriarchy.
Yes, and I know about mansplaining.
And mansplaining.
Which is when I tell you how things should
be. Okay. Yeah, exactly. and so, I don't know if it's still an academic term or not, but we are going to be talking to Assistant Professor Mariel Barnes, who has spent time analyzing the manosphere, which is the portions of online, not even just young men, but men in general, mm-hmm. and the eruption of content that targets men or is meant for men, and kind of the resurgence of some misogynistic overtones.
Would you say toxic masculinity?
Maybe, but I don't know. So we're going to talk to Mariel coming up at 1:35 as far as what's happening online is manifesting in real life and in our politics.
And for some of you gentlemen, don't expect me to be on your side.
Yeah.
For some guys, we're all in this together. Some guys you may be, well, if you're surprised, then you haven't been listening.
Yeah, exactly. So that's coming up at 1:35.
Very nice. Then there's been a case that people in Milwaukee have been really invested in. This 37-year-old Hmong woman was deported back to Laos. And she's never been to Laos. She mm-hmm. was born in Laos, but she's been in America since she was 8 months old. So Sophie Carson has been following this story for the Journal Sentinel. She's going to join us at 2:15 to give us an update and try to explain why somebody with permanent residence was just deported.
Yeah. Do you see the other story, the Wisconsin Dells man?
No.
Who he had voted for Trump, and his fiance was deported.
I did see that. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, it's odd. I was going to say it's funny, but it's not funny when somebody gets deported. But it's odd that people, and we talk about this all the time, people voting against their own self-interest. Did this guy, it'd be interesting to hear him tell it, did you really think that this was everybody else except your fiance? That you're...
I think there's cognitive dissonance there as far as like the othering that can happen as far as, you know, well, not you, not my neighbor, not my fiance, not my brother-in-law. It's like, you're one of the good ones.
Yeah.
Right. And then, but it's the othering of these scary people that you see on the news and how those stories are covered of people you don't know.
Right.
And it's like, those are the people that we want
away.
Gone.
Yeah.
And not Denver realizing what it could actually end up being.
And you hate to you hate to say I told you so, so we won't. You just, we all messed around, and now we're going to find out.
But that is a really scary story.
It is a horrible story.
I'm glad Sophie's coming in to be able to talk about that.
It'll be very good. What are we doing when we come back?
When we come back, there was a pretty strongly worded... editorial by the editorial board for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel today, basically lambasting Elon Musk's, not that he's donating to Brad Schimmel's campaign, that's perfectly fine, but in the spreading the dishonesty.
Yes.
And we wanted to have a conversation as far as, does it matter?
Yeah. And should we, well, and I have another question that we will get to when we come back.
All right.
After this.
We'll stay with us.
Spanning the state.
Welcome back to Spanning the State. I'm Kristen Bry.
I'm Brian Noonan, and I saw this morning, and I thought of you, Kristen. You were at you were doing your panel, but this was an editorial from the editorial board, and at first glance, I was like, oh my gosh, they're going out on a limb. Because it came out against Elon Musk. And they did start out by saying, and you mentioned this before the break, if Elon Musk wants to donate all kinds of money into his PACs, they said that's his right. So nobody's arguing that Elon can give the money. But at the end of the first paragraph, they said, in the interest of voters here, we ask one thing, be honest about it. And that is what it all boiled down to. That the editorial board of the Journal Sentinel is basically saying that the groups that are sending out these mailers and ads on Facebook and stuff are just creating lies out of whole cloth. And so it's Progress 2028, and we've mentioned them a couple times.
Yeah, I think we talked about this
week. Yeah, they masquerade as a progressive alternative to the Heritage Foundation. But it's not. And so it's the Elon Musk funded deal. It purports to address things Crawford is supposedly committed to, which are hot button issues, of course, that many voters are into. And again, the editorial board comes out and says, listen, the First Amendment protects their right to say this stuff. But if you're going to get involved in our elections and Wisconsin is used to big money coming in from all over, just stop lying to everybody. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to get your opinion on this since you work for the Journal Sentinel. Everybody knows that.
I was not involved in this op-ed.
No?
I am not on the editorial
okay,
board.
Okay, well, all right, forget it. We'll talk about something else. But, I mean, I was very excited, and I wanted to applaud the Journal Sentinel because in the last couple of months, a lot of media outlets have backed down from anything that is critical of the administration or Elon Musk. And so for the Journal Sentinel to come out and go, listen, this is an important election for the people of Wisconsin. You want to contribute, fine. But I think all of us want the same thing that the Journal Sentinel editorial board want. We just want these people to be honest. Tell us what
we all want that. I think some people want to win. Right? Like,
the voters, I guess.
Yeah, for voters. Voters, readers, listeners.
Not the campaigns, of course.
Yeah, like I would say there are some people who I do genuinely think, as long as you win, the way you get there is not as important. And so, as far as saying everybody wants, I definitely think there's some people who don't.
That's true. And I think I've mentioned it before. I've done some work for some campaigns before, and yes, that winning is the only thing. It's like Al Davis with the Raiders back in the 70s. Just win, baby. There's a reference for everybody over 40.
I don't know that one.
For voters, I know I would rather see, if I had to see the same amount of ads, I would rather those ads be telling me what...
Actually informing you?
Yes. Tell me what that candidate is going to do, not what the other one... Not made up garbage about what the other one
I know.
Did in your fantasy world. That's not what I want. But you're right.
Actually informed you as far as what they would be doing once they're on... the court. I was scrolled back up on the talk and text line because this morning Adam Roberts and Steve Scafidi had interviews with both candidates.
Yes.
And I got a little bit on my drive to Waukesha. I think I heard a little bit of the Brad Schimmel interview, but I need to go back and listen to the whole things. And some of the texts are like, tell us what you're going to do. And this goes back to what we were talking about earlier this week. It's like, how are these people supposed to campaign?
Yeah.
Given what the nature of the job is, because what are they going to do? They're going to respond to the cases that come in front of them.
Yes.
And also, I think, I don't know which, the text that was on here, I don't know which candidate was doing this. It's like, stop talking about the other person.
Yeah.
And I think that is really true as far as we want to be more informed. We want to be, understand who these people are. Also understand what their role is. I mean, they were talking about the rape kits again this morning. And I still like... It's important, but it's in the past, and that's also not what his job is and the job he's trying to do.
Right. So the other question I had about this, and again, I think it was a great piece by the editorial board, doesn't matter anymore. And we've talked about this with celebrity endorsements and other endorsements, but it used to be when a newspaper of record for the city, like the Journal Sentinel, came out and said, this is who we endorse, or this is... who were admonishing, people would pay attention. Now with all the other platforms telling us what to think and who to vote for, does it carry any weight anymore? Not that it doesn't matter, because it does matter to get that voice out there. To get this opinion out there is a big deal. But how much weight does it carry?
Like, does it change anyone's mind?
Yeah.
No. I don't think so. I mean...
I don't think so either.
Because in the last... weeks leading up to the November election, the New York Times editorial board was pretty unapologetic as far as saying this is what's going to happen if Donald Trump is elected. And I mean, they laid it all out.
Yeah.
And I think it probably only spoke to people who already knew that because of the decentralization of our media now.
Here's a question that we've got to go to break, but I want you to think about it during break because we hadn't talked about it before.
Okay.
But I heard this terminology this morning because there was another episode of vandalism with Teslas today.
Oh, God.
This morning.
In Wisconsin?
No.
Okay.
This was somewhere. I was on the news this morning. 5 Teslas set on fire at a dealership or something. And now it's being termed domestic terrorism. Do you consider that domestic terrorism or just an act of vandalism? Don't give me your answer
All
now.
Right, I will think
give me
about
your answer
it.
When after we come back, which we will do after this on Spanning the State.
Welcome back to Spanning the State. I am Kristen Bry.
It's called Find That Smell in the Studio. We're trying to figure it out. Jessica Ty, who will be doing the news in a minute, thinks hers is a smell. But I asked you a question before the break. There was a bombing, not a bombing, 5 Teslas were set on fire at a dealership in Las Vegas last night.
Okay.
The White House has come out and called it an act of domestic terrorism, which I thought was hyperbolic, but the problem is in a lot of ways, it does fit the definition of domestic terrorism.
Okay.
Because it happened here in this country.
Yep.
It was driven by a political movement, you could say. But according to the federal definition, it has to be an act that is dangerous to human life and is trying to coerce the government by means of mass destruction, assassination, or kidnapping.
So since no one got hurt, you don't think it rises to terrorism?
And I don't believe it was mass destruction.
Okay.
You know, it wasn't a bombing. It wasn't a mass shooting. It was wrong and it's illegal and I'm not condoning it.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it rises to that level. I would have to say, based on all of the definitions, if I were running for Supreme Court in Wisconsin and people were pumping millions into my campaign, I would say this does not meet the criteria for domestic terrorism.
I think the fact that no one got hurt is a big differentiator.
And it wasn't luck that no one got hurt. Obviously, a first responder could have gotten hurt going to put out the fire. But the objective of this was property damage, mm-hmm. not mass casualties. It was to send a political message.
Did they catch the guy?
No, it was one guy dressed in black.
Still on the lam?
Oh, yeah, listen.
All right.
Comes in under cover of darkness. Got away in his Cybertruck. ABC News and local headlines is next.
Welcome back to Spanning the State. I'm Kristen Bray.
I'm Brian Noonan. In between all the serious things that we talk about here on Spanning the State, we do try to laugh once in a while.
I feel like we laugh at least once a show.
At least, yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah, and you and I both have comedic backgrounds.
We have funny
bones. We're used to making people laugh.
Yeah.
We like to laugh ourselves. I would consider myself a pretty easy laugher.
I would say that. You're a generous laugher.
Yeah, and things strike me as funny, and I've always been lucky enough to be around, like, my friends are all funny, mm-hmm. They're not comics, they're just people who are funny.
Yeah.
And so it's always, do you consider yourself an easy laugher or no?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. A very loud laugher.
That's true.
John and Julia brought me on their show because they were making fun of, like, they were making fun of, not they, John and Julia, but the media, right? The Trump's campaign was making fun of Kamala's laugh.
Yes.
And so they brought me on their show. They're like, you have a very distinct laugh. I was like, well, that's one word for it.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
Gee, thanks for calling me out. Well, the reason we're bringing this up is today is National Laugh Day.
Oh.
Yes. So here's your challenge for the rest of the show. If you want to text in your favorite joke, know that we'll laugh at it if it's dirty, but we won't repeat it. So if you want us to repeat it and it's good, then text it to the Signing Unlimited WTFJ Talk and Text Line. If it's dirty, we're going to copy it, remember it, and tell it in our private lives. 855-616-1620. National Laugh Day was created by Laffy Taffy.
Okay.
Because Laffy Taffy, I didn't know this because I'm not a Laffy Taffy guy, they include two jokes on every wrapper.
Yeah. I forgot that they do that.
Yeah. See, I didn't know that. And so they did a little survey, and these are some of the findings from their survey.
Okay.
96% of people like to make others laugh.
Who are the 4% of people like, no, I hate making people laugh?
I think my dad used to be one of those 4%. He was not big into laughter. And there were a couple people in audiences that I've had over the
years.
They're
like, why are you here?
Yeah, this is not what we signed up for. 77% of people think they're funny. In reality, only 47% actually are. 39% say they make fun of themselves to make others laugh. Self-deprecation, always funny. All right, I want to ask you this, because 60% of people say they are funnier than their significant other.
Oh, this is an ongoing debate in our house.
Oh, is it?
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a running joke as far as who's Mike thinks is he's the funnier one.
What do you think?
I'm funnier on camera.
Okay.
He'll say very funny things, and yes. I try to make him do it again so we can I can post it. He's terrible on camera. He's only funny in the moment, so he could never make a living off of doing it because it has to come organically
or not
cannot
at all.
Be repeated.
Oh, that's
so I don't know. It's different kinds of funny. He is pretty funny. He makes me laugh almost every day.
I don't think I would get an argument from Debbie saying I'm the
funnier one.
She does make me laugh occasionally, but that's just it. 68% of men think they're funnier, while 54% of women think they're funnier.
Okay.
All right. 33% of men say they laugh more than 10 times a day, compared to 29% of women.
Huh.
I guess that would make sense, because you have to put up with us, so if you're not laughing, you're probably sobbing. right? That'd probably be the thing. The number of calories burned by 15 minutes of laughter, 50.
Okay.
Number of times more likely it is for a person to laugh in a group than alone, 30 times more likely. If you spend
it is contagious.
It is contagious. And if you spend a lot of time laughing by yourself, you should probably get checked into a facility.
Fair.
That is...
Well, I guess when you're watching something at home, like if you watch a stand-up special at home, yeah. It's a lot harder to laugh out loud than that same stand-up special if you see it in person.
Oh, right. If you're in a club that is not
full?
Packed in,
yeah,
it's really tough. And I laugh, you know, I'll be listening to a radio show or a podcast or something, and I laugh by myself, but not just... If I'm sitting silently in a room, I don't just start to laugh because then, you know, the guys in the white coats come and take me away. Number of times babies laugh in a day, Kristen, what do you estimate? You're most recently with a baby.
I don't know. She laughs a lot, but I don't think I've never thought to count it.
Well, 300.
Really?
300.
Oh.
Do you have, now you've been doing this dad joke thing.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a joke for us today on Laugh Day?
So the one that I want to give is like borderline.
Okay. Listen, if it doesn't use one of the seven dirty words, then you're
right. It doesn't, but then. It is borderline, but it's a funnier of the two I can think of right now.
Okay.
What do you call a cheap circumcision?
I don't know.
A ripoff.
Oh!
I got you.
Yeah, well, if I think about it too long, I'll cry. But
fair.
Debbie asked me last night if we were going to go on vacation, and I said, well, where would you like to go? And she said, that's okay. Surprise me. Take me somewhere I've never been before. So I took her to the kitchen.
Ba-dum-ba!
Good morning. That was one of my...
Rhea was very delayed on that punchline.
Rhea couldn't tell if she was offended by my toxic masculinity. That was a joke from the manosphere. Like how I segued in to our next guest. We will talk about the manosphere, what it is, why it is, and is it something after this on Spanning the State. Welcome back to Spanning the State. I'm Brian Noonan.
And I'm Kristen Bry. And over the last couple months, I would say, since the election, Gen Z men have been getting a lot of attention in the media. Their shift to the right, their struggles when it comes to similar attainment and education and jobs as girls, and also the fact that they were a major voting bloc in helping to reelect Donald Trump. They were 56% of men between the ages of 18 and 29 voted for Trump. So what explains this? There is new research by La Follette Assistant Professor Marielle Barnes, and she analyzed the online ecosystem dubbed the, quote, manosphere, to better understand a subculture largely ignored by researchers and journalists, but which now is exerting considerable influence in our politics. So Marielle Barnes, Assistant Professor at Public Affairs at UW-Madison, joins us now. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
So I guess... You did an op-ed in the Journal Sentinel. I know that you've done some other interviews on this since your paper came out. I had never heard this term before, the manosphere. And so is this something that's academic or is it something I just hadn't heard of?
No, it's actually quite a popular term. It's what these online communities refer to themselves as.
Oh, okay.
And it's been around for quite a long time. So it kind of started in the early 2000s and then kind of took off around 2008, 2009.
So they refer themselves as it, but how would you define it?
Yeah, so I would call the manosphere an online community of kind of websites, blogs, forums that promote misogynistic perspectives and the hatred of women. And they're kind of united under this common belief that men are actually oppressed under what they call, this is their term, the gynocracy. And so, yeah, it's this idea that men have been systematically subjugated by women.
Hmm.
And when you start talking about this, I think of content people like Joe Rogan, but there's got to be a lot more than him. Where is this all coming from, and who are the big culprits in this manosphere movement?
Yeah, so Joe Rogan, I think, has oftentimes kind of sane-washed a lot of these more objectionable kind of views. But you're right that there's many more people underneath who are involved. So, like, there was a guy named Paul Elam who used to run a website called A Voice for Men that focused on men's rights. They also ran a website called Register Her, where they put out bounties on women for photos of prominent feminists and for women who had what they said made false accusations about rape. There's also like incel communities. There's men going their own way. There's a whole bunch of different sub communities underneath in the manosphere.
As a guy who is older, usually when we think about that kind of intolerance and misogyny and all the things that go along with this manosphere, it's usually blamed on guys my age who can't adapt and can't change. This is, as you said, 18 to 29-year-olds. Why are these young guys so upset?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So I think it spans like all age ranges, first of all, but like the younger men nowadays are being much more vocal and prominent. I think that's partly because they feel empowered by people like Andrew Tate, for example, who says some very objectionable things and has, you know, is an alleged sex trafficker of women. And so, and a lot of the stuff that we see in the political system nowadays, like, kind of hate, a lot of times hatred of women has become mainstream, and I think that emboldens young men to express that hatred more.
So you spent a lot of time in the online ecosystem, which I'm sure was hard. I don't know. I don't know how you managed to be able to read all that stuff, but I guess there's what's happening online, but how is this manifesting offline? Like, is the being anonymous online providing cover, or are we actually seeing this correlating to more violence against women in other data?
So it's really hard to tell how much linkage there is between the manosphere and kind of violence. Our paper hypothesizes that there is, and I think we can see that through like mass shootings that occur. Like a lot of those mass shooters have had connections to incel groups, and they've been, you know, they've had manifestos where they specifically talk about their inability to find a girlfriend. Right. And that's the motivation for that violence. And then, like, we also see, like, pickup artists who, like, need to interact with women and want to sleep with a lot of women. And so we hypothesize that they are probably more likely to commit sexual assault because that is what they have to do to be a man. And so that's the Andrew Tate kind of element to it. So I think, yeah, we see this manifestation in kind of very physical forms of violence. We also see, I think, just a move towards being more vocal about like hating women and making women responsible for the ills in society nowadays.
So if you're a young woman, what can you do to combat this or protect yourself from this? Because I have a daughter who's in her 20s and this sounds terrifying.
Yeah, I think it's really hard. So like, I think being aware of some of these groups is really important. So like pickup artists have this strategy where they call negging. Mm-hmm. So they will say, that dress would look really good on you if you were 20 pounds lighter. So it's kind of this compliment, but not like it's actually they're insulting you, right? And it's designed to like wear down young women's self-esteem. So they're easier, or the theory behind it is they want you to pay attention to them because that self-esteem is lowered. So being aware, I think, of these groups and what they do is a good way to protect yourself.
And so to take that further as far as what women should do for themselves, but I know because of this understanding of kind of the shift to the right and the manosphere and the election results, there is more of an effort or a conversation happening on the left of reaching young men. Have you like dabbled at all in that research as far as what is a better, more healthier way to reach some of the guys who find themselves like who are finding comfort in this manosphere?
Yeah, I haven't. That's the next project that we're potentially working on and dabbling, like what strategies work for pulling people back from, yeah, this kind of community. I think it's interesting to like reinforce, like, young men are often saying like they feel left behind, right, in terms of jobs and education. And yet, you know, Joe Biden introduced like the biggest infrastructure bill ever in the United States and like poured money into like developing infrastructure and developing trades. And so making people aware that maybe the situation isn't actually as bad as you think, and providing options to young people, I think, is really important too.
The idea that seems to be being pushed is this old way of thinking about being a man. You got to be tough. You got to, you know, women are not up to. is this, do you think, a trend, because we've seen it before, that it kind of dipped and now it's coming back to the surface? How long, if this is a trend, how long do you predict that this might last? Is it just, you know, the next 4 years under the current administration? Is it something that we can see starting to go down at some point and get back to a more even keel with young guys?
Yeah, these things are really cyclical, actually. In terms of making predictions, that's super tough, and academics really don't like making predictions. But I think as long as, it's tricky. As long as we have, you know, a political system and political leaders who embody these ideas, like, yes, I think this kind of trend towards, like, traditional masculinity, and you have to be very macho and stoic and not have any emotions, and you have to be tough, and it just matters how many women you sleep with, is going to be, you know, continue to be prominent. After that, if, like, the political system turns and our political leaders change, like, yeah, who knows? I would say, who knows? I would hope that it would change for the better.
Yeah.
Us too.
Well, thank you for spending time with us today. Merrill Barnes is an assistant professor at the UW-Madison School of Public Affairs, and the paper is The Manosphere and Politics. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
All right. We'll be back with more after this.
All right, on the other side of the news, it's Spinning the State on Spanning the State.